So talk of big crop numbers, but really, is it going to be record yields? Time will tell, but markets are talking about it today. Good afternoon. You're listening to the American Ag Network. I'm Susan Littlefield, and Mike Zuzulo joins us. Mike is with Global Commodity Analytics, and I think that's where we have to start first, because social media is all abuzz about what we could see, especially since corn numbers, the best they've seen for August in 9 years.
Yeah, and I think that plays a role in today's trade, almost certainly, Susan, because the crop conditions coming out on Monday afternoon. And while the beans went down 1 point and good to excellent, that corn maintained 73%. Almost identically at that same time period, Monday afternoon, we also saw a major private analyst come out and take corn yields nationally up to a record 188.1. And realize that's 7.1 bushels higher than USDA's number. The trade, I think, had been setting with the idea that 185 was where we were going to probably shake out as far as USDA's. That's just what I'm hearing from colleagues in the industry up until Monday afternoon. That 188 number made a big splash, I think, because that's going to be, keeping everything consistent with USDA's July WASDE report, that's going to be about a 620 million bushel increase on production. That's going to take you from a 1.66 billion bushel carryover, theoretically, to almost a 2.3 billion bushel carryover. I think that was the big splash in the pond, and that's why the corn was very willing to follow the wheat lower. But the big question remains, why is the wheat still going lower? Why is the wheat not finding a low? I was hoping we would find a low, thinking we would find a low about 3 weeks ago as we got into the harvest and saw both hard red wheat and also some of the other crops being harvested, some soft red wheat, seeing maybe no better than expected yields and not off the charts high, having already built in such a big expectation in the month of June. But we continue to see wheat go lower and corn follow it willingly. I have to think that this is mainly due to the Black Sea region and the trade still not knowing what the production number is for either wheat or corn when it comes to both Russia and Ukraine.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's kind of the sleeping giant. As you saw some numbers be released that some are saying, wait a second, where did this come from?
Yeah, to give you an example of what we're looking at in the WASDE report, and this is where I talked to clients and subscribers as late as Monday afternoon, Monday night's blog, and I said, okay, we've got a big U.S. crop, but what about the world numbers? You know, world corn ending stocks, tightest since 2013, world corn stocks to use, tightest since the drought year of 2012. How much can we really add to the world ending stocks given the strong demand that we continue to see? And that's where an attaché report was released last night, where they took with the Ukrainians and the ag ministry leading the charge that they increased acreage, and this is planted acreage, by 10% versus the prior month. They also took the yield up dramatically to close to a record 7.71 tons per hectare. And what that means to all of us out there, Susan, is they went from the official corn production number in Ukraine as of July, 30.5 million tons, up to 34.7 million tons. And then that increased the corn export expectations that's going to be ready pretty much right away as soon as we get done with our crop here, from 24 million tons to 28.5 million tons. So the point is, in terms of Russia wheat and Ukraine corn, we have people out there, including the USDA Ag Attaché, saying a big crop gets bigger. But it's so funny, not in a funny, laughable way, but a funny, odd way, on page 5 of this attaché report, the attaché writes, at the time of this writing, a deficit of subsurface soil moisture was developing on almost all of Ukraine, and that could have an adverse effect on corn yields. The Post could therefore downgrade its corn yield forecast should the situation continue. It's not getting much better in Ukraine from my vantage point. So this is one of those price action time periods where we really got to pay attention to not just what the U.S. yield is going to be in August, but what it's going to be in September, and then what the Ukrainian production is going to be in both August and September as well.
The other bright spot has continued to be this cattle complex, but even the hogs today trading higher, even though some data didn't get submitted to give us an idea of some demand numbers coming from packers. What are you seeing in this momentum that continues to build?
Yeah, it is a momentum. I think it's a protein-wide momentum. We made new record highs in fat cattle to begin with this morning. That was followed up with new record highs in the feeders. We've since made a couple, if not three, new record highs since this morning in both. And I think this is where it, essentially a rising tide lifts all boats, with the hog complex feeling the supportive feature of the proteins, especially given that the price in the pork side of the equation is actually down a little bit versus last year at this same time period. And so I think cattle are almost assuredly pulling the hogs up with them at this stage because of that cattle hog spread and the premium that these cattle are giving us. It's interesting to note that the fat cattle made the highs first. I think that's probably because of the cash market not backing down below 243 Monday night. Midday, we're coming in closer to 240, 241. But that still leaves, even after this rally of $4 in the August contract on Tuesday, the August futures trading at about 235. So they're still $5 to $8 cheaper than the negotiated cash price. And I think that's really what's at play here as the August futures goes off at the end of this month. And those August fat cattle really should represent the cash market this late in the contract.
And that million-dollar question is, when will we see a top? Because they've been talking about demand waning at the meat counter all summer long, and it really hasn't happened as bad as what people were predicting.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, Tyson made a comment about that as well. They are slowing down their chain speeds because of supplies, but they are not seeing a big hit to their beef demand at this point. A couple of other anecdotal notes were out there as well, suggesting the same thing. I think that I'm in the same mindset I have been for quite some time, is you kind of need something to keep feeding the bull in this market. Our latest one was screwworm, and with that screwworm issue and now the Brazilian imports, you can feed the bull for a while. I wouldn't be surprised to see the August contract be maybe the top end of this market because of the fact that then what comes on board is the October contract for fat cattle and then the November contract for the feeders, and between a little bit bigger supplies coming in the last quarter of this year per USDA's numbers and also the way we traded in 2014, 2015, that fourth quarter tends to be more challenging. So we'll see if that adds up that way or not.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike. Mike Zuzulo joining us this afternoon to give us the market wrap-up for a Tuesday. And as always, a quick reminder, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss not suitable to all investors. And that is the Tuesday market wrap-up on the American Ag Network.